Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week, Where the Money Lives. Exclusive new research by the Business Journals shows where the money lives, where it's moving, and who's managing it in the Triangle. Before the cover story, we'll read the biz section and the reporter pages. The biz section is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. His top story this week, Brunswick County is now attracting kids. The dynamic growth in Brunswick County is evolving as the population overall around Wilmington explodes, with children joining the influx of retirees to the county. Brunswick County, just south of Wilmington, had only 74,000 people in the year 2000, but retirees flocked to the area, especially after Maryland's Lord Baltimore Properties began the 4,500-acre Brunswick Forest development in 2007. Now the once sleepy Highway 17 is packed with stores and restaurants to serve the booming population. The county's population jumped from 152,908 in 2022 to 159,964 in 2023, a 4.6% rise that led the state. Wake County, by comparison, saw its population rise 1.7%, and Johnston County went up 3%. A substantial part of the growth is retirees and relocations from the Northeast, but also elsewhere. Some are retirees from Florida moving halfway back, says Tyler Newman, CEO of Wilmington's Business Alliance for a Sound Economy. What some people don't realize is that the area is being specifically marketed to and communities built for that demographic. The median age in the county is 56, well above the state average of 39. But it's not all older guys in New York Yankees hats playing pickleball. With Wilmington exploding, young families are moving to Brunswick County. That growth is evident in the schools, which currently serve 13,000 students, but is reaching capacity. The county commissioners voted August 5th to move 257 acres to the school district for future use. New Hanover / Wilmington is largely developed, so new housing is being built in Brunswick due to infrastructure and cost to accommodate Wilmington-based employees from our major businesses and institutions, Newman says. NC State grad taps into pickleball craze. Pickleball is everywhere, and an NC State University graduate is capitalizing on the sport's success. Tyler Maloney is the founder and CEO of TeachMe.2, an online platform that connects users with coaches offering lessons in a variety of skills. Founded in 2021, TeachMe.2, that's T-O, can be downloaded as a mobile app where users can connect with coaches representing around 10 to 15 different skills, including golf, tennis, guitar, piano, and, of course, pickleball. So we deliver probably somewhere a little north of 100 pickleball lessons a day across the country, Maloney says. In the Triangle, pickleball is by far the most booked skill on TeachMe.2 in the region, with 85% of all Triangle pickleball lessons take place in the Raleigh metro. The company raised $5 million in seed funding led by Bling Capital with participation from Marketplace Capital, 20 Growth and Gokul Rajaram, and existing angel investors. In Cary, more condos are planned for downtown. Interest in downtown Cary is continuing to surge, and now more condominiums are on the way. Stanley Martin Homes of Virginia plans 56 townhome-style condominiums called SOCA 56 at the corner of Kildare and Byram Streets. The units will be 2-over-2 duplexes starting in the mid-500,000s. Hampton Pitts, division president for Stanley Martin, says, with all that downtown Cary offers, it's really easy for buyers to understand what their lifestyle is going to be if they live here. And downtown Raleigh is getting a new hotel with European flair. Raleigh has lacked enough decent hotel space since the Sir Walter Hotel became senior apartments decades ago, but the city is continuing to up its game in that regard. And now a local entrepreneur plans a 90-room hotel with a, quote, more European, quote, feel on Blunt Street. The city council recently approved a rezoning for 423 South Blunt Street that essentially allows Suhail Al-Awar to put a 7-story hotel there. Al-Awar hopes to begin construction next summer and open by early 2027. The hotel he plans to build will include approximately 90 rooms, along with retail and restaurant spaces on the ground floor. Retirement community rises in Raleigh. A major redevelopment of a senior living facility has broken ground. Pruitt Health, owner of the Oaks at Whitaker Glen, is starting construction on the Continuing Care Retirement Community. The $385.5 million redevelopment will provide senior living, retail, and health care in one location. When complete, it will have 246 independent living apartments, 82 assisted living apartments, and a 106-bed skilled nursing center spread over 20 acres. The Real Estate and Development section is written by Kaylee Thompson. Towers turn to law firms to fill space. As the leasing market for office space remains sluggish, there's one industry that's making noise. Law firms tend to be the company signing leases for office space lately, even if it's only for smaller spaces. Law practices take up almost 2 million square feet of office space in the Triangle, according to JLL. The first tenant that signed on at the new 1,000 social building at the Exchange Raleigh development was Whitley Law Firm, occupying 18,000 square feet on the second floor. It moved its headquarters to the new office tower in Midtown Raleigh. Morningstar Law Group recently increased its office space, going from 11,500 square feet to 14,500, by moving to the Truist Tower on Fayetteville Street in downtown Raleigh. The firm, with around 37 attorneys in the region, moved in April to start its 8-year lease. JLL reported that more than 240,000 square feet of law firm leases were signed from fourth quarter 2023 to first quarter 2024. That includes a renewal by Williams Mullen for 50,302 square feet and an expansion by Brooks Pierce that resulted in a total of 43,047 square feet. Both leases were for offices in downtown Raleigh. Granville Sumner Law Firm relocated from Wade 1 to Wade 3 at the Wade Office Park near PNC Arena, signing on for 27,354 square feet. Over the next 5 years, 23 law firm leases are set to expire in the region. With office construction dwindling, that means there could be increased competition for the available Class A office space. Despite these lease-ups, the office vacancy rate overall is still high, hitting 16.6% for the second quarter, an increase from 15.2% in the previous quarter. The Class A vacancy rate was 17%. South of downtown, Raleigh Gateway is getting a new look. The southern gateway into downtown Raleigh is being transformed with the first part of a mixed-use development complete. Mira, a 7-story apartment building on Kindley Street, is the first part of a larger mixed-use development planned by Robert Ferris, president and CEO of SFL Plus A Architects. The apartment building finished earlier this year, with the first residents moving in June. Developed by a partnership between Spandrel Development Partners of New York and Origin Investments of Chicago, Mira has 288 units with 2 levels of parking. Studios start at $1,424 a month, while 1 and 2 bedrooms start at $1,722 and $2,396 respectively. The units feature smart technology, quartz countertops, stainless steel appliances, custom desk nooks, 12-foot ceilings, floor-to-ceiling windows, and large terraces. The $87.4 million project has 15,000 square feet of amenities. Those amenities include a swimming pool, fitness center, outdoor game pavilion, dog park, co-working facility, maker's space with complimentary supplies and equipment, multi-sport simulator, sky lounge with speakeasy, and a club room with a chef's kitchen and bar. There's also 2,600 square feet of ground floor shared office space and complimentary e-scooters available for tenants to rent. Spandrel Development Partners funded Mira via a construction loan with Citizens Bank and equity from Origin Investments. This is an opportunity zone investment for Origin, so it must hold the project for 10 years to get the full tax benefits. The project was originally envisioned as a 10-story mixed-use office building, but between financing struggles and COVID, Ferris changed it to residential and brought in Spandrel. However, the development team faced challenges that came with the high-cost construction market, forcing them to repeatedly reevaluate pricing. It's a culmination of vision, perseverance, and hard work creating a product that candidly is better than we could have hoped for. We have amazing amenities, beautiful design, ceiling heights on our 3rd and 7th floors that from a Spandrel perspective we're able to achieve something better than we've ever done in the past. says Emmanuel Newman, founding principal of Spandrel. Mira is at 121 Kindley Street. What the larger development will include remains unclear. Part of the site was approved for up to 40 stories. Ferris previously said one of the buildings would be between 20 and 40 stories. The development on the five lots at Kindley Street would include a building built by the Explorer School, two more residential buildings, a potential hotel, and either a mixed-use office building or mixed-use retail and residential. Farther south along Saunders Street, Kane's Realty Downtown South development has yet to go vertical. The retail and restaurant section is brought to us by Kate Tracy. Her main article in that section, Beer Garden now offers mini golf. Niall Hanley has been slinging beer in Raleigh for 2.5 decades. Now he wants his customers to practice their putts while drinking. Hanley, owner of Hibernian Irish Pub and Restaurant and Raleigh Beer Garden, opened a mini golf venue recently at Raleigh Beer Garden in Glenwood South. Called Hop Shots, the 18-hole course is located in the rear of the beer garden. Customers pay $10 to play the course, which is open until 1:30 a.m. The back area of Raleigh Beer Garden spans approximately 14,000 square feet, but it's not just for mini golf. Other activities include table tennis, cornhole, and foosball. Typically, you'll have 50 people out there playing golf, Hanley says. Since opening Hop Shots, Hanley says the reception has been great. People are really digging it, he adds. In addition to being an event venue for birthday parties and other gatherings, Hanley hopes Hop Shots will attract business from company outings. It's just something very, very different outside of the normal run-of-the-mill corporate gatherings, Hanley says. Hanley has his hands in a number of other businesses with his company, Hibernian Hospitality Group, including Botanical Lounge and Rooftop, Watts and Ward, Morgan Street Food Hall, the station at Person Street, and a couple projects in Charlotte. In addition to Glenwood South, Hibernian Irish Pub has another location at AD 21 Falls of Noose Road. Hop Shots is not the only new mini golf venue popping up in the Triangle. Partee Shack, that's P-A-R-T-E-E, Shack, a family-owned business, has leased two new locations that will include mini golf. The company opened its first location at 5300 Fayetteville Road in 2021. Other new indoor golf venues include Videri Chocolate Factory co-founder Sam Ratto's New Golf 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 and the Albatross in downtown Cary. Also in downtown Raleigh, Chef is to open a new burger restaurant. Downtown Raleigh is getting a new burger spot. Chef Louis Zwan is opening his new restaurant, La Ghana, at 911 Northwest Street in Suite 105, located in the former space of Prospect's Craft Kitchen and Cocktail Bar. The new restaurant, located just north of Glenwood South and Smoky Hollow, is targeting a fall opening. Zwan, a former dentist, moved to New York in 2016 to pursue a career in the culinary world as a restaurant consultant. He moved to Raleigh in 2020 and has worked at a number of different restaurants, including Madre Raleigh. Originally from the Dominican Republic, Zwan also participated on the television show Master Chef Dominican Republic and later helped open Dominican restaurants in New York City, including Bark Barbecue. Menu items at La Ghana include Wagyu blend burgers, French fry dishes topped with Parmesan, chives and spices, and layered cakes. The restaurant will serve beer, wine, and will have seating for 25. Zwan says the restaurant aims to be more than a burger restaurant, looking to break barriers, allowing customers to taste and experience something they have not had before. We're inviting the Raleigh community to embark on a culinary adventure where familiar comfort meets elevated flavors, he says. Also in restaurant news, Chef Preeti Waz to open locale at the Hub RTP. On the heels of an absolute pinnacle career experience at the James Beard Awards, Raleigh chef Preeti Waz has signed a lease for a new Chini restaurant. Waz plans to open a 3,000-square-foot restaurant next year at the Horseshoe at Hub RTP, a mixed-use development along Highway 54 in Richard Strangle Park. Chini is the first retail tenant at the project and will go in the ground floor of a 5-story office building. Waz has a Chini location in downtown Durham. She closed Chini Indian Food Emporium in North Raleigh earlier this year. She says the developers behind the Horseshoe Project, White Point, and the Research Triangle Foundation reached out to her a year ago about leasing space for a restaurant. Raleigh Baker launches new donut shop. The dough will soon be rising at Alejandro Contreras' very own shop. Contreras, who started making donuts during the pandemic, is approximately 6 weeks out before opening Tepuy Donuts, that's T-E-P-U-Y, in its first brick-and-mortar space at 2820 Capitol Boulevard in Raleigh. Contreras signed his lease a year ago, but the opening has taken longer than expected, partly because of permitting challenges with the city. The 1,500-square-foot shop will start off serving cold brew and drip coffee with plans on more specialty coffees later on. Contreras plans to hire 10 people. "We're going to be making everything there from scratch," Contreras says. Originally from Venezuela, Contreras moved to Raleigh in 2019 and worked at the Mandolin restaurant. During the pandemic, Contreras gave some of his donuts to Mandolin owner Sean Fowler, who started including them in his to-go meals. Ben Tobin brings us the Greater Triangle section of the Triangle Business Journal. Affordable homes are rising in Wilson. An affordable housing development in Wilson recently took a big step forward. The city and general contractor Woda Cooper Companies of Ohio broke ground recently on Pender Crossing, a 48-unit affordable housing community reserved for those making 40% to 60% of the area median income, that's AMI. The development will be on the site of the former Pender Street Park at 300 Pender Street. Wilson City spokeswoman Rebecca Agner says the cost of the project is $12.3 million. The North Carolina Housing Finance Agency supported the project through allocating federal low-income housing tax credits. The city of Wilson is committed to the pursuit of high-quality, affordable housing, Wilson Mayor Carlton Stevens says. "We understand safe, enjoyable, affordable housing is imperative for families to thrive." The community will have 18 one-bedroom apartments, 18 two-bedroom apartments, and 12 three-bedroom townhomes, all of which will be for rent. Here's a breakdown for each type. One-bedroom apartment, $388. That's 40% AMI. $531 if you're at 50% of AMI, and $663 if you're at 60% of AMI. Two-bedroom apartments start at $457 for 40% AMI, $622 a month for 50% AMI, and $779 a month for 60% AMI. And the three-bedroom townhomes start at $517 at 40% AMI, $707 at 50% AMI, and $873 for 60% AMI. For comparison, average rent for an apartment in Raleigh is above $1,500 a month. This type of housing can support an individual Wilson resident making as little as $21,680 per year, says Agner. Additionally, the Wilson Housing Authority will provide 25 project-based vouchers for rental assistance for the development under the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's Housing Assistance Program, which is designed to assist residents who do not have sufficient income to pay their rent. The project is expected to be completed in late 2025. Wilson is a former tobacco town looking to keep things affordable for pre-existing residents while attracting new ones as it looks to revitalize its downtown. New Jersey IT firm to put jobs in Youngsville. A New Jersey IT company says it will invest millions of dollars for a new facility in Youngsville. Planetroy, that's P-L-A-N-I-T-R-O-I, LLC, an IT management solutions company that specializes in providing data security, among other services, announced August 26 it's investing $9 million to create a 100-job production center of excellence in Franklin County. According to Barbara Fedor, Franklin County's Economic Development Director, the 50,000-square-foot facility will be at 2405 Innovation Loop, Building 200, in the new U.S. 1 North Commerce Center Industrial Park in Youngsville. The average wage for new jobs will be $36,700. "After an exhaustive national search for a location for our Center of Excellence, Franklin County stood out as not only an excellent location, but also a strong environment for us to grow and develop our next generation of Planetroy teammates," says Paul Baum, Planetroy's CEO and founder. Kerry Group sells Goldsboro Hotel to local buyers. Another hotel in an outlying county of the Research Triangle area has sold for millions of dollars. Goldstone Hospitality of Morrisville purchased the Super 8 by Wyndham Hotel at 798 Corporate Drive in Goldsboro for $4 million on August 14th, according to Wayne County deed records. Goldstone Hospitality's members are listed as Chirag Vasani and Mayur Gajera, both of Morrisville, according to Secretary of State filings. The seller is LLC AVN Hotels of Cary, which bought the hotel in January 2018 for $1.1 million, according to deed records. While Wayne County saw a population decline from 2010 to 2020, down to 117,321 from 122,623, that population total had slightly rebounded to 118,686 as of July 2023, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. And in Johnston County, land near Clayton skyrockets in value. A prominent home builder has spent major cash to acquire land in one of the Triangle's fastest-growing counties. Meritage Homes of the Carolinas, a subsidiary of Meritage Homes Corp., purchased more than 114 vacant acres off Country Lane south of downtown Clayton for roughly $11.2 million earlier this month, according to Johnston County deed records. The seller is LLC Country Lane Partners I of Raleigh, which bought the land in October 2022 for $2.5 million per Johnston County deed records. That means the Scottsdale, Arizona-based home builder paid more than quadruple the price of what the land sold for less than 2 years ago. The price comes to around $98,000 per acre. Representatives of Meritage declined to comment on what the home builder plans to do with the land. When we get closer to construction and opening for sales, I'll be able to share more information with you, Meritage spokesman Spencer Philibaum says. Meritage has been active around the Triangle. In June, Triangle Business Journal reported that Meritage purchased around 50 acres off Old Bowie's Creek Road in Anger for more than $3.2 million as part of the River Glen community. The higher education section is written by Zach Ezone. His top story, budget experience aids Roberts at UNC. University of North Carolina students began classes in Chapel Hill this month with a money manager, Duke University graduate, and former state budget director officially in charge. Lee Roberts, after serving on an interim basis in the spring semester, was named the next chancellor for the state's flagship university. Roberts came to UNC with no past experience in higher education administration, but he says he's had conversations with other new university chancellors and found everybody has something to learn. If you're a provost, which is a pretty common path, then you're having to learn how the state budget works, what it means to manage a large real estate operation, Roberts says. I've had exposure to all those areas, just as examples. So while I don't have traditional experience, I do think I have fairly relevant experience. Roberts was a managing partner of Sharp View Capital in Raleigh, spent time at Morgan Stanley, and was a managing director of Triangle-based Piedmont Community Bank Holdings. He was state budget director under Governor Pat McCrory and also on the UNC System Board of Governors, where he chaired the budget committee. Everything ultimately comes back to the budget, Roberts says. The budgets are statements of priorities that are where the rubber hits the road in terms of putting resources against those priorities. And that's an area where I feel pretty comfortable. Roberts is grappling with topics he has past experience with, finance and real estate. This beautiful historic campus comes with a longer list of repairs and renovation needs than we will ever have the funding to tackle in any given year, and we need to make sure we're doing a good job prioritizing those projects accordingly, he says. The future of the Smith Center is part of those considerations. We've actually played in the Smith Center almost twice as long as we played in Carmichael, which is hard for some people to believe, Roberts says, but it's now an older building with a lot of repair needs, and we have to decide the best strategy there. Wake Tech opens its newest campus in Wendell. With the return of students for the next academic year, Wake Technical Community College has opened its latest campus expansion. The college, which operates throughout Wake County, has opened its new Wake Tech East on Rollsville Road in Wendell, in a fast-growing area of the county. The campus currently has three buildings, with two more coming online in 2026. The existing facilities include a public safety simulation complex that houses training programs for first responders, an education innovation center that serves as a hub for campus operations and general classes, and the campus's central energy plant, which also serves as a renewable energy training center. With these existing facilities, the college is offering 4 degree programs at the campus, associate degrees in arts, science, engineering, and an emergency medical science associate degree in applied science. The college will break ground on 2 more facilities later this year, beginning development on its Advanced Technology Center and a fire and rescue services training complex. Duke receives $30 million to hire for AI and research. Duke University has received $30 million to support research and hiring around the areas of computing, artificial intelligence, and machine learning. The funding comes from an award given to the university by the Duke Endowment, a private foundation based in Charlotte. This is part of a broader faculty hiring initiative at Duke focused on science and technology. The Duke Endowment's award will support the creation of the Elevating Duke Computing Program, which will fund the hiring and startup costs for the university to add 1 senior faculty member and 4 to 7 mid-career faculty positions over the next 5 years. The first hires funded through this award will be based at the Department of Computer Science at the Trinity College of Arts and Sciences and the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at the Pratt School of Engineering. This new cluster of faculty hires will accelerate breakthroughs in computing, expand the application of these advances to new domains, and enhance computing education at all levels at Duke, said Gary Bennett, Dean of Duke's Trinity College of Arts and Sciences. This award is part of the Duke Science and Technology Initiative aimed at expanding science and technology education and research, according to an announcement from Duke. Let's turn now to our cover story, Where the Money Lives. The story this week is actually multiple articles by different writers. The first one is called Money on the Move, and the writer is David Pertell. North Carolina's rising status as a destination state accelerated with the surge in remote work that was fueled by the pandemic, with thousands upon thousands of higher earners moving to the Tar Heel State and to the Triangle in particular. That trend has slowed over the past couple of years as higher interest rates pumped the brakes on the housing market. But the most recent data from the U.S. Census Bureau and Internal Revenue Service show the shift remained dramatic in 2022. Looking at patterns for in and out migration, North Carolina counties combined saw a net gain of more than $4.6 billion in adjusted gross income between 2021 and 2022. That figure was fueled by huge gains in Wake County and outlying areas of the Triangle, such as Johnston, Chatham, and Moore counties, and the flood of new residents to the coast played a large role as well. Wake County alone gained more than $350 million in adjusted gross income during the period. The county added 38,659 tax filers with an in-migration and lost about 36,000 to out-migration. In Johnston County, the net gain topped $193 million, and for Chatham, it was $178 million. Moore County, which includes the rapidly growing communities of Pinehurst and Southern Pines, gained $173 million. But leading statewide was Brunswick County on the coast, an area that includes Leland across the Cape Fear River from Wilmington, stretching south to Southport and over to Ocean Isle Beach near the South Carolina border. Brunswick saw a net gain of $487 million, according to federal data. And neighboring New Hanover County, which includes Wilmington and the coveted oceanfront communities of Wrightsville Beach and Figure Eight Island, pulled in a net gain of $228 million as the coastal real estate market began to really heat up. Interestingly, during that same period, Mecklenburg County, the second largest county in the state behind Wake, saw a net loss of $38.8 million in adjusted gross income. At the same time, neighboring Union County gained $244 million. Durham County was also among the 13 counties statewide that saw a net loss in income from migration, slightly more than $41 million. Orange County saw a net loss of $114 million. For the data analyzed for out-migration, it had the highest average income per tax return at $119,000 among all counties in the state. Orange County saw a net loss of 107 tax filers, 5,955 coming in and 6,062 moving out. For in-migration, Chatham had the highest average income per return in the state at more than $150,000. So it's no wonder that communities with high-end homes have been popping up along the Highway 501 corridor between Chapel Hill and Pittsboro. Wake County's average income per tax return for in-migration was $88,000, and for out-migration it was about $85,000. For Wake, Durham, and Orange counties, the overall net gain was $195 million in earnings. And in Chatham, Johnston, Lee, Franklin, and Harnett counties, the figure balloons to more than $873 million. The second article in the cover story is entitled Where the Wealth Lives, and this is written by Cameron Snipes. Raleigh's 27608 zip code leads the way in an exclusive index that identifies the Triangle's most affluent areas. In the Triangle area, there is one spot that outshines the rest in terms of top-tier wealth, the 27608 zip code in Raleigh. But other areas are making gains as the region grows outward. The 27608 location is home to the Tony neighborhoods of Five Points and Hayes Barton and the area around Carolina Country Club. It has a per capita income of more than $91,000, the highest in the Triangle, according to an analysis by the Business Journals and its 2024 Wealth Index. Typical home value in the 27608 zip code is nearly $950,000, and the wealth is tightly concentrated in the area, with only about 5,000 housing units across a land area of 3.45 square miles. Three Cary zip codes, 27519, 27518, and 27513, areas that include the Amberley, Cary Park, Preston Village, and Lockmere neighborhoods, were next on the list of Triangle's wealthiest. Looking outside the core counties of Wake, Durham, and Orange, places such as Clayton, Pittsboro, and Pinehurst cracked the top 40 among the region's 50 wealthiest zip codes. In fact, Pinehurst sits at number 12. The booming area in Moore County is attracting a younger demographic than its traditional retiree base. To the north of Raleigh, Rollsville, a hotbed for new housing, ranks one spot behind Pinehurst. Zooming out on North Carolina, only the Charlotte zip code of 28207 eclipsed 27608 as the state's wealthiest area. Per capita income for the Queen City area of 28207, which includes the affluent Myers Park neighborhood, was more than $180,000, with typical home values of nearly $1.5 million. The Triangle Business Journal interviewed some movers and shakers in the money area for their Where the Money Lives section. The first one is Burke Kuntz. He's an investment strategist and principal at Trust Company of the South in Raleigh. The TBJ asked, where are your clients moving their money now? Our approach is quite long-term in nature, so in most cases we do not actively pursue short-term market trends in public markets. We're always going to be tilting towards value stocks and slightly away from trendy growth stocks and tilting into small caps versus large caps, and lastly tilting into quality companies with higher, more consistent earnings. Volatility has returned to the market recently, and market leadership is moving away from the Magnificent Seven. This is the sort of environment in which our strategy tends to shine. On the bond side, we have been extending duration just a little, but we're still shorter than broad market. We do tend to see continued growth interest in private equity and private credit. Investors in these asset classes can earn higher returns in exchange for giving up liquidity for a multi-year period. Also on the private side, although this is typically not our focus, we're on the lookout for selective real estate opportunities for our clients. Obviously, office is challenged, and there's a great deal of multifamily supply coming onto the market here locally. So the TBJ asks, what key advice are you giving? The core of our firm's philosophy is effective risk management, helping clients determine what the optimal level of market risk is for each of them, and then making sure they're getting paid appropriately for taking those risks is what we're really all about. That hasn't changed. What's different is how much risk there is in U.S. equity markets today, with valuations where they are and how those risks are distributed. While we're always preaching diversification, it's especially important for investors to be diversified when broad benchmarks such as the S&P 500 have themselves become inadequately diversified. Did you know that about 35% of the entire S&P 500 is in 10 stocks right now? Even the best companies in the world begin to lose their allure at certain prices, and frankly, the gap between what investors have been paying for growth companies and the rest of the market is more than a little reminiscent of the dot-com era. In the last several weeks, it appears that investors have become a little more price-sensitive regarding what they're willing to pay for earnings growth. Stocks, bonds, and private equity. Are you seeing movement along these sectors? TBJ asked. Trust Company maintains a value bias when it comes to equities, meaning that our client portfolios are generally going to be populated with shares of companies with relatively low stock prices as compared to their earnings power. So there won't be a great deal of client asset movement that doesn't involve our tilts toward value and also toward smaller companies and quality companies. In fact, our value philosophy has been seen as a little out of favor as compared to major index performance, owing mainly to the recent dominance of the so-called Magnificent Seven. Investors that share our value-tilted worldview miss some of the Magnificent Seven's gains, but of course now they're missing out a lot of the pain. We expect smaller companies and lower price companies to outperform, consistent the historical data, and it appears that a growing number of investors are starting to sniff this out. We expect to see more interest in allocating to international markets. The S&P 500 has become a large cap growth index, and as tech growth cools, so too will the performance of U.S.-centric indices such as the S&P 500. U.S. stocks are far more expensive than their overseas counterparts, and we do not think this is a permanent condition. Regarding fixed income, we saw a spike in interest in buying individual treasury bonds as short-term rates went from 0% to above 5%. With the Fed seemingly poised to begin cutting interest rates soon, bonds have a built-in tailwind. Bond prices rise as interest rates fall. We continue to see growing interest in alternative investments such as private equity and private credit. Investors give up liquidity in exchange for the promise of higher returns when making these investments. TBJ asks, American investment versus foreign, what advice are you giving here? We have historically had a U.S. home bias, but we maintain a sizable commitment to overseas investing. The U.S. represents almost two-thirds of the global stock market, but that means that roughly a third of the opportunities in equity markets is outside the U.S. We just think it's a good idea for equity investors to have access to opportunities across the globe. It's important to remember that while the S&P 500 has been a powerhouse for years, that's not always the case. For example, between 2000 and 2009, the S&P posted a negative return, while many international markets performed well. The U.S. has amazing companies, most of the best ones, actually. Most of the best management teams are American, and their jobs are made easier because the U.S. is a great place overall to do business and to really focus on creating shareholder value. Other countries with more sprawling governments, regulators, and unions can be more difficult places for stocks to do well. All that said, much of this is priced into markets, and there are enough worthwhile opportunities overseas to warrant allocating internationally. Lastly, international markets are historically inexpensive these days versus the U.S. Our process always starts with valuation, and valuation overseas are super attractive. TBJ asks, are there particular sectors you and your firm are recommending? We have not changed our stripes even as growth stocks have outperformed for some time. That has not always been easy, but the reality is that having exposure to thousands of attractively priced businesses across the U.S. and around the world and letting the magic of compounding growth work over time remains an excellent idea, in our opinion. There are tortoises in the world and there are hares, and we're clearly on the tortoise side of the spectrum. Hares have a lot of fun, but we all know how that fable ends. Are you seeing AI impact the investment world? It's difficult to overstate the extent to which excitement about AI-driven earnings and earnings growth has had on markets during the last 2 years. From December 2 years ago through the end of July, NVIDIA returned 583%. Microsoft returned 66%. Google returned 70%. Meta has climbed 295%. And Amazon is up 95%. But we think investing in AI stocks now is a tough game to win. That's because the stocks are just so expensive. It's hard to underwrite those investments at these levels. Are you seeing the election impact decisions from clients? Yes, definitely. And every presidential election is a great opportunity to remind people that while politics can theoretically impact markets, it's really only on the margin. What matters far more is what makes our economy great. Innovation, competition, and the ability to compound growth. The historical record demonstrates that the market doesn't seem to really care who's president. Accordingly, we tend to advise our clients to express their politics at the ballot box, not in their investment portfolio. The next money manager TBJ spoke with is Conley Perry. He's a private wealth advisor at Socratic Better Wealth in Raleigh. TBJ asks, where are your clients moving their money now? Clients are taking a long-term approach with their investment decisions. They're holding their positions unless there are opportunities to purchase investments that are undervalued due to recent market conditions. Recently, we've found some of those opportunities to purchase equities like large-cap S&P 500-type investments. What key advice are you giving at this time? The key advice is to remain patient and committed to your investment strategy and goals. Every client has an investment policy statement that is designed to set expectations and guide their decision-making during market fluctuations. This advice is consistent every year and is even more important in today's markets. Are you seeing more people coming into North Carolina? Yes, people are moving into North Carolina and have been doing so for many years now. We see a lot of people relocating from the northeastern part of the U.S. This area provides attractive real estate, lower cost of living, exceptional educational institutions, lower property taxes, and favorable living conditions. We're also seeing major corporations calling North Carolina home, which opens more job opportunities and competitive wages. Stocks, bonds, and private equity. Are you seeing movement along these sectors? Most clients are staying committed to their investment models and not making short-term decisions that could negatively affect their long-term goals. However, we are seeing higher weightings in equities, in particular stock funds that pay attractive dividends. We prefer investments that are designed for growth as well as paying dividends. This allows the portfolios to continue receiving income while we wait for the market to recover during a downturn. American investments versus foreign. What trends are you seeing here? With the most recent global sell-off, clients are more comfortable in investing primarily in more well-known domestic companies. Our portfolios do have a small weighting, generally under 10%, in international equities. We have avoided international fixed income securities in recent years. International markets still possess long-term growth potential, so we continue to keep them as part of our growth models. Are there particular sectors you and your firm are recommending? We believe in diversification in our portfolios. This provides negative correlation and balance as we seek to maximize risk-adjusted returns. We do not chase sectors as it does not guarantee better results in the long run. We try to avoid sectors that add unnecessary risks, like alternative investments, unless it makes sense for the client. Are you seeing AI impact investment world? Yes, the investment world is not immune to the impact of AI. AI is starting to be implemented in how the industry delivers services and manages clients' experiences. We have seen services like robo-advisors use AI technology as a portfolio management tool. Boutique specialized firms like ours continue using advisor-driven client asset management for our clients. From an investment standpoint, companies are embracing AI, which could affect their overall performance. Investors are concerned about AI overspending and higher-than-expected AI infrastructure costs. We have a neutral position on technology. Are you seeing the election impact decisions from clients? The election affects the market due to the inherent uncertainty that it provides. According to the CBOE Volatility Index, the market volatility is historically calm during the summer months before ramping up leading to Election Day. This year has seen less volatility so far than normal election cycles. This may be an indication that investors are more familiar with both candidates' tendencies and approaches. We build our clients' portfolios to withstand volatility during elections and other macroeconomic influences. Clients do have a level of concern relating to elections and their investments. However, they tend to not make investment decisions based on election outcomes. The next money manager TBJ spoke with is Katie Peden. She's a senior portfolio strategist at First Citizens Wealth. And the question is the same: where are your clients moving their money now? As interest rates have climbed, clients are increasingly taking advantage of higher yields in cash and short-term instruments like certificates of deposit and treasury bonds. The move is understandable considering attractive 4% to 5% plus returns on assets with a high degree of safety in an era of geopolitical tensions, economic uncertainty, high inflation, and a contentious election season. At the same time, many other investors have been investing in equities to leverage the phenomenal growth and resiliency in stock markets and the economy. We've seen particular interest in U.S. large-cap growth stocks, specifically in the technology and artificial intelligence sectors. More recently, we've seen some rotation out of big tech names as investors shift from what has worked in the past to the opportunities that lie ahead. As inflation moderates, investors are taking their profits and rotating into interest rate-sensitive areas that could provide opportunities in a lower-rate environment. In addition, clients are asking about using private investments to diversify their strategy. There's been an explosion into this space over the last 20 years. What key advice are you giving at this time? Is that different than what you might have said in recent years? Every client needs a diversified investment strategy that aligns with their financial plan, long and short-term objectives, and risk tolerance. Maintaining the discipline needed to pursue such a strategy can be easier said than done, especially in an uncertain environment. We believe diversification will be even more important in the years ahead. Over the last decade or more, we've seen average equity returns of 16% per year, which is significantly above the long-term average. High equity returns came easily during a period of historically low inflation, easy monetary policy, and a lot of government stimulus. In that climate, stocks far outpaced bonds, which averaged around 3%. As we look forward, however, we expect to see a much smaller spread between stock and bond returns. Many experts see equity returns reverting back to the long-term mean after a decade of overperformance. In contrast, returns on bonds are expected to be higher than average. Ensuring that you have the appropriate allocation will be critical to driving optimal outcomes. Stocks, bonds, and private equity. Are you seeing movement along these sectors? Since the Federal Reserve started its rate increases in 2022, there's been a shift among clients and their investment preferences. For so long, bonds yields were exceptionally low, making them unattractive to many investors. Clients instead turned to stocks, which were rewarded during the low interest and inflationary period of the last decade. But more recently, bonds are starting to attract more and more investors. Investors finally feel there's an alternative to higher risk assets and see attractive yields as a way to increase their income and reduce the volatility of their portfolio. Over the next decade, we expect lower levels of returns on stocks. Given this, more investors are seeking out alternatives to the public markets via private investments. Private investments expand the investment universe and may provide clients with enhanced returns. American investments versus foreign, what trends are you seeing here? The U.S. emerged from the global pandemic in a stronger economic position than most of the developed world, allowing for better growth opportunities here at home. These fundamentals have supported investors who overweighted U.S. stocks relative to foreign stocks in recent years. Going forward, however, we believe the outlook for international investment could again become attractive. While we remain underweight to foreign markets, we have recently started to adjust that balance to favor more international exposure. Within the international space, we recommend staying diversified across many asset classes. For example, developed and emerging economies, small cap, infrastructure, and REITs. Are there particular sectors you and your firm are recommending? Our strategic investment process is founded in extensive research and is based on quantitative and qualitative analysis, outcome optimization, and the risk profile of our clients. We don't make decisions based on sector exposure. Instead, the weighting of sectors is a byproduct of our tactical asset allocation and investment selection decisions. Focusing on factors like value, quality, profitability, minimum volatility, size, and momentum as one way we seek to achieve meaningful returns over time. Most of our overweight recommendations this year have been driven by superior growth estimates and the cash flows that can withstand a higher interest rate environment. Now that interest rate cuts are on the horizon, we've started to shift more weight into interest rate-sensitive areas, such as small-cap stocks, which should benefit from lower rates. Are you seeing AI impact the investment world? Algorithms actively monitor the market and identify opportunities to buy or sell based on a defined set of criteria. This system frees up the trader, allows for quick execution, and can possibly lead to better investment outcomes. AI can make our lives better, easier, and more efficient, but with it also comes some potential shortcomings. One is that AI bases its decision on what has happened in the past, so it's not always well suited for predicting potential outcomes it has never seen. While AI is having positive impact, I don't think it will replace the human element of decision-making anytime soon. Are you seeing the election impact decisions from clients? Many clients tend to worry about market outcomes in election years, making them reconsider their risk exposure with the uncertainty in the markets. Overall, the right approach during election years is to stay diversified and to avoid trying to time the market by making short-term decisions. Historically, we know it matters very little from an investment perspective who is president and what the makeup of Congress is. So rather than focus on politics, it's better to focus on market fundamentals. The next money manager TBJ spoke with is John Madison, partner and head of the Raleigh office at Ballantyne. Where are your clients moving their money now, cash and bonds? We've advised clients to keep 2 years' worth of spending in cash, that's money market funds that are offering high returns. Within fixed income, we've continued our emphasis on bonds with less sensitivity to higher interest rates. Stocks, high-quality global companies, especially large U.S. stocks, high-quality stocks tend to focus on strong business fundamentals, typically associated with profitable companies with low leverage and stable earnings. Practically speaking, they're cash-heavy, leverage-light, consistent earners with fortress-like balance sheets and formidable market advantages. Investors are also trying to diversify their portfolios beyond the current heavy concentration in the so-called Magnificent Seven. Private capital. We think there's a long runway in high-quality private credit opportunities and a lot of market support for continued strength in quality-based real estate stocks in the Sun Belt, an enduring investing theme for us. We believe this is also an attractive time to commit to venture capital, given the lack of funding and attractive valuations for early-stage companies. Our approach is to focus on building private capital programs consistently over time instead of a one-and-done approach, which is one reason why private capital is an area of continued focus for us. What key advice are you giving at this time? We continue to counsel clients to keep 2 years of spending needs in cash. It's a bedrock of our investment process because it allows clients to better tolerate volatility that might be associated with leaning into stocks. In doing so, they're able to capture a high equity risk premium. At the present moment, there's one "this time it's different" element. Most of our bonds are cash-like, which means shorter duration, given where interest rates are and the inverted yield curve. When it comes to stocks, we prefer investments that are easy to trade, low cost, tax efficient, and diversified, particularly through ETFs, that's exchange traded funds. We focus on quality investments and make strategic adjustments based on our model's guidance. For the long term, we recommend having a diversified and steady investment in private equity, private credit, and private real assets. This mix offers a wider range of opportunities, tends to perform better due to less efficient markets, is generally less volatile, and typically provides for better after-tax returns. Stocks, bonds, and private equity. Are you seeing movement along these sectors? Valentine is currently neutral and not at the extreme of any range for any single asset class at the moment. For bonds, we prefer shorter maturities given the inverted shape of the yield curve. For stocks, we prefer high-quality global companies. We strongly focus on consistent and systematic investment in private capital. We've invested in various specialized funds, including senior credit, distressed debt, southeastern real estate, disruptive technology, healthcare, and decarbonization initiatives. American investments versus foreign. What trends are you seeing here? Contrary to what the popular press would have you believe, the U.S. remains the best place to incubate and develop business, given its free market economy, receptive business climate, and entrepreneurial nature. We currently place a strong emphasis on U.S.-based capital markets compared to developed and emerging economies elsewhere. Valuations currently look better overseas across a number of equity and fixed income-oriented assets in particular, and will make a compelling case over the longer cycle, but we have not yet seen the catalyst to allocate there yet. Are there particular sectors you and your firm are recommending? Yes, recommending short duration high quality bonds, global quality and U.S. large cap stocks, and senior credit, among others. Avoid long dated bonds, certain sectors of real estate such as office and retail, and complicated structured and opaque investment strategies that depend upon financial engineering to succeed. Are you seeing AI impact the investment world? We are seeing transformative productivity gains across a host of industries, which is showing up in the attention received by pure play AI names to date. That said, we're in the early innings of this game, and there is a long way to go as far as investing in AI companies. We also see the impact of AI in the way we're adopting tools to work more efficiently at Ballantyne. We lean into technology to help us streamline tasks so that we can spend more time focused on our clients. Are you seeing the election impact decisions from clients? Elections are emotional for everyone, especially this year, given how polarizing politics have become. Clients are anxious that if their candidate doesn't win, financial markets will crash. Rather than make significant changes to allocations, we recommend those especially nervous to top off their cash positions to ensure they have immunized their 2 years' worth of spending needs. A historical review of market performance across election and non-election years tells us that regardless of how intense it feels now, the outcome will likely have a limited impact on the market 12 months from now. Ultimately, economic indicators such as GDP growth, unemployment rates, and inflation trends play a more significant role in shaping market returns. Going deeper, there are three things we know. Daily market volatility in election years is nearly double that of non-election years. It's interesting to note that historically, when the incumbent party loses the election, the market experiences intensified corrections prior to election day. 1 year later, market performance is virtually the same, suggesting volatility is short-lived. Research is mixed on whether it's preferable to have one party or another in the White House and on the lag effect for certain policies to take root and impact markets. However, our data reveal a statistically significant relationship only in the split Congress scenario. Typically, policy in certain sectors, taxes, spending, health care, trade, immigration, climate change, will impact markets more so than an election. The big number this week, 34,679. That's the number of new apartment units Raleigh is estimated to see between 2024 and 2028, according to new research from Rent Cafe. That's a 47% jump from the previous five-year period. 217. That's the number of new townhomes Barwell Townhomes LLC proposed in new subdivision plans for Shawcross Park in southeast Raleigh. The LLC is addressed to local attorney Howard Moy. It's a sign of the continued interest in residential options in that part of the city. 69.4 thousand. That's the average per capita income in the Triangle area's wealthiest five zip codes. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.